Spin 103.8. You're welcome back to Spin Talk with Lauren. And assisted suicide is our first topic on the show today. I would like to hear your thoughts on it. Lots of people are getting involved on the Spin 103.8 Facebook page. You can text or WhatsApp Spin Talk now, 087 711 1038. Right to Die campaigner Tom Curran was speaking at the Oireachtas yesterday about enacting a law that would allow for assisted suicide for people while also protecting the vulnerable here in Ireland. And I mentioned a little earlier that over in the state of Victoria in Australia, that is going ahead at the moment. So if you Google assisted suicide today, you will see lots of stories about what's going to happen over in Australia. So look, it's not a black and white issue for a lot of people. There's a lot to it. So I would like to hear your thoughts. Get involved and let me know what you think. 087 711 1038. Should we have a law that would allow assisted suicide here in Ireland? Well, joining me on the line now is Ellie Ball. And Ellie is from an organisation called Dignity in Dying. Ellie, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Ellie, I said at the very start of the show that there are lots of arguments for and against assisted suicide, but there's also lots of ins and outs to it as well when we talk about the term euthanasia. And I would encourage our listeners to head over to the HSE website because there is a lot of explaining there. But just from your perspective, you work with Dignity in Dying. People can find out more at dignityindying.org.uk. Tell me a bit about your campaign for assisted suicide.
Okay, so we operate in the UK and we're a non-profit organisation campaigning to change the law so that terminally ill, mentally competent adults in their final months of life could have the option of an assisted death. So it's probably worth me clarifying that we campaign for assisted dying. So okay. That's when a terminally ill person, a person who is dying, is having kind of control over their death and is being assisted to have a peaceful, dignified death. Assisted suicide tends to refer to people who aren't necessarily dying, so they might have an incurable or chronic condition, but they're not dying within the next few months. And in both of those cases, it's the individual who kind of administers the life-ending medication themselves. And then when we're speaking about euthanasia, that tends to be applied to a broader group of people. So it could be, you know, people that are chronically ill, incurably ill or disabled. And it's the doctor who kind of does the final act. But with assisted dying, it's really about the individual. And what we campaign for is really for people who are dying to just have a bit more choice and control over their own death.
Okay. And I understand a lot of people argue that assisted dying is not a million miles away from certain types of palliative care, that you are just making people as comfortable as possible at the end of their life.
Exactly. Well, we always say that assisted dying should never be given as an alternative to palliative care. It should just be given as an option alongside the great palliative care that we have in the UK and Ireland. In the USA, in the state of Oregon, they've had assisted dying there for about 20 years, and they still have some of the best levels of palliative care in the country, and 90-odd percent of people who request the medication are already enrolled in hospice care. So it's really about just embedding it as one of a range of choices that people can have at the end of their life, and being realistic that even with the best palliative care, some people suffering just cannot be adequately relieved, and there should be another option for those people who are really suffering and there aren't any other options for them.
Ellie, what are some of the arguments against euthanasia, assisted suicide, assisted dying?
So there can be a lot of talk about a slippery slope, and that just isn't the case when you really examine the evidence. So the law that we campaign for in the UK is modelled on the one that has been operating in Oregon for 20 years and has since been extended to 6 other states and is very similar to the one that the Australian state of Victoria is about to introduce. And that is that the option would only be available to terminally ill, mentally competent adults with less than 6 months to live, subject to strict safeguards. And when you actually look at how those laws are operating in Oregon and those states in America, there have been no widening of the original laws. The criteria haven't been broadened out. It's still tightly restricted to that group of people. So there isn't the slippery slope argument. It just doesn't stand up when you look at the evidence from overseas. And we know that it works really well. It's still a tiny proportion of people that choose that law. but it brings great comfort and reassurance to other people, and even those who end up getting the prescription for the medication, many of them don't actually use it. It's just knowing that the option is there, and feeling reassured that if things do get too much, they have the medication there, which they can choose to use or not use.
That's very interesting to hear. And I completely understand that every individual is different, every case is different. But I suppose another concern that people might have is that if someone's family doesn't support their decision, or maybe one family member especially, and I know a lot of the talk is mentally competent people making this decision for themselves, but I think a lot of people would be worried that, you know, this could cause a huge issue for family members who might not agree on what someone has decided.
Yeah, well, really what this is about is individual choice, and it's about respecting individual people's autonomy over their life, over their health, over their bodies. And in the law that we propose, there are various safeguards involved which help protect vulnerable people who might have family members who could coerce them into doing something. So in the law that we propose, the individual would have to meet the criteria that I've already mentioned. Two independent doctors would have to verify that those criteria have been met. And then it would also have to go to a high court judge who would also have to determine that the criteria had been met, that the person was making a clear, settled decision of their own volition and no kind of coercion was taking place. And then there's still a period where that person at any stage in the process can say, no, I've decided against this. And even if they do end up getting the prescription, of course, they can choose not to use it. It's completely up to them. And I think that's the key here. It's about giving people the right to make decisions about their own life and their own death.
Ellie, really appreciate your time on Spin Talk today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ellie Ball there. She's from an organisation called Dignity in Dying. You can find out more info, dignityindying.org.uk. And I also mentioned, Rachel found a lot of information this morning on the hse.ie. I just Google assisted suicide. I think it's the second search comes up, and there's so much information there, and I completely appreciate it is very complicated. It's not straightforward. But what I'm asking you today is how you would feel about introducing a law that would allow assisted suicide here in Ireland. What would be your issues with it, or why do you feel maybe it could be a positive thing? If you've ever had someone in your life, or maybe it's been you yourself who has, you know, been faced with the bad news that you are terminally ill, and you maybe you've had to watch someone go through an illness, did it change your perspective on a law like this? Get involved. You can text or WhatsApp 087 711 1038. Tina is on the line. Hi, Tina.
Hi, Lauren. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Tina, what are your thoughts on, and as Ellie rightly said, you know, euthanasia, assisted suicide, assisted dying, all slightly different, but in general, what are your thoughts?
I would be very much in favour of it. As I said to Rachel there earlier on, I took my dad to live with me for the last year of his life, and he was in chronic cardiac failure, so there was never going to be a good outcome. It was, he was palliative, and that was it. It was a matter of when. But he basically should have died about 6 weeks before he did. He lingered on in complete, not necessarily pain, but he was very agitated because all the toxins were building up in his body and all his organs were failing. So he was very agitated, and it ended up, he literally had down to, he pretty much had no conversation. He wasn't very conscious all the time, but literally 24 hours a day, all he said was, help me, help me, oh, help me, or oh, and the F word. That is all we got out of him for about 6 weeks. We had the doctors up trying to give him patches, and I remember at one stage he had to get a thing that I had to squirt into each side of his cheek, and the doctor had warned me this is going to knock him out for hours because he hadn't slept, and I hadn't slept for about 2.5 days at this stage, and he got 45 minutes relief out of it.
Oh, God.
And I remember standing in the hallway with the GP. I was in a very distressed state at that stage. And I said to him, if he was a dog, you'd be telling me to put him down, that it would be the kindest thing. I said, because he's human, we can't put him out of his misery. And he was, as I said, he was never going to get better. It was a matter of when. The other thing was, in our family, my sister kept saying, oh, I really, really want to be with him at the end. But we didn't know when the end was going to happen. Thankfully, she was there. My brother didn't want to be there with him when he died. And for something like assisted suicide, you can discuss it with the family, provided it's the, you know, I do think it should be like a living will, that the person that's dying has put this into, you know, legal instructions.
Yeah.
And we could decide, okay, let's all decide when we're going to do this. And then those that want to be with the person when they die are there, and those that don't are not. You know, and I just think it's a very kind thing to do, just to give them, in our state, my sister and I kept saying, oh, this is cruel. This is so cruel. I mean, we were so distressed watching him. And as I said, literally, I could hear throughout the night, every night through the baby monitor, help me, someone, please help me. And that will, sorry, haunt me. Sorry.
Oh, Tina, don't say sorry. Of course, of course.
6 weeks of your father begging you to do something for him and you couldn't. Oh, sorry.
No, oh my God, don't say sorry at all. Tina, you're amazing, and that just must have been so horrific and taken such a toll on you.
Look, I have a special needs daughter who has been through many surgeries, and yes, it's traumatic and you're worried and the whole lot, but watching my dad die was horrific. And he should have been allowed. I mean, he ended up, you know, I was changing nappies, you know, for my dad. My role with him completely changed from being this daughter that adored him to being his nurse. And it completely changes the dynamics of the relationship. And there were things that he hated. He was on a fluid restriction and he blamed me for not allowing him. He actually told a nurse one time, I'm going to have written on my headstone, died because his daughter wouldn't give him a drink. He had a fabulous sense of humour, you know. But our relationship completely changed, and it was, I was the parent and he was the kid, and I would tell him, no, Dad, you can't have that. No, Dad, you can't do that. You have to stay up. You can't go to bed. You know, when he was, you know, yeah, a little bit better. But as I said, at the end, it was the most horrific thing I have ever had to go through. And he'll be 2 years dead next month. And that still haunts me, that I can still hear him in my head asking, somebody, please help me. Somebody help me. Yeah. And I couldn't do anything for him.
And do you think, Tina, really, that if there was a law like this in Ireland, that, you know, as he progressively got worse, that he would have said to you, right, Tina, when the time comes and I ask for help, I'll be okay. Like, put me out of my misery. Do you think he would have wanted that?
Well, funny, in the sense that he had always said, you know, I have a DNR, do not resuscitate.
Yeah.
And when it came to, you know, that we were told, look, it could be any time now, and we were talking to him about the do not resuscitate again, he said, well, tell him to try once. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know, when you're faced with your own mortality,
of course, yeah,
will you change your mind? But I think by the stage that he was suffering, he wouldn't have been in a position to say, this is what I want you to do for me. But had it been done when he was of sound mind to say, if I get to the stage where I am in vast discomfort and upsetting to my family and that I can't make that decision for myself, I appoint the executors of my will to make that decision for me. You know, something like that. And that obviously would have to be passed by a doctor to say, yes, this is the right time for him, no more than a vet would do for an animal. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, I've heard of people saying, oh, I'm putting the dog down because it's a nuisance, and they go and they say, oh, he's after biting me and I think he's getting nasty, and that's bull, basically. But I think in this type of situation, once a GP and once the person has this in their expressed wishes, when they're of sound mind, I think then it should be up to a GP and the family and the GP to pass and say, yes, this is the right time, and let's do it, and we arrange it between the GP and the family. Because, as I said, you know, sometimes you hear people hanging on and then, yeah, somebody has to go back to work and then all of a sudden they die or whatever. Yeah. I just think, yeah, I completely agree with it. Absolutely.
From your own 100%. Experience. Tina, yeah, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I hope you're okay.
I'm grand.
Okay, yeah. Good woman. Thanks
right.
a million.
Yes, thanks for taking the time. Thank
good
you.
Good to speak to you today.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
That can't have been easy. And I just, you know, Tina is not the only person who's been in that position. It must be extremely, extremely difficult to watch someone you love die and know that there's nothing that you can do for them. But at the end of the day, assisted suicide, assisted dying is legal here in Ireland. Would you like to see a law that would change that? Let me know what you think. I'm on 087 711 1038. Massive thank you to Tina, who came on a few moments ago to talk to us about her thoughts on assisted suicide and just her own experience of nursing her dad. Next month, he'll be dead 2 years. And, you know, it was an awful time for Tina. He was so unwell. So when you hear a story like that, it does make you think. But Owen has been in touch on 087 711 1038 to say it's all very well saying just pass it, but how exactly is this going to be monitored? Who's going to decide at what stage of illness someone is allowed to choose to die? Everyone has different standards when it comes to quality of life. So who will have the overall decision? And I think, yeah, they're great questions to ask, because as I mentioned at the top of the show, there's different laws in different countries or different states. And, you know, it's not a black and white issue. Emer says, assisted suicide is not something I've ever given much thought to until recently. My mum has dementia and it's absolutely heartbreaking. Her whole personality is changing. She's very depressed, is hallucinating, etc. This is her absolute worst fear coming true. And I know if she no longer wants to live like this. And I know, sorry, she no longer wants to live like this. Assisted suicide would be a blessing in her case. Well, here's the thing, Emer, and I'm so sorry to hear about your mum, because I think dementia is a lot of people's worst nightmare. But the law that is being brought in over in Australia, you know, patients have to make 3 clear euthanasia requests. They have to be assessed by 2 experienced doctors. Those that are approved will be granted permits for the lethal medications, which must be self-administered. And not everyone can do that. So you might be of sound mind and you might be able to make your request, but you might not be able to self-administer. Or you might be able to self-administer, but you mightn't be of sound mind to make the request. Do you know what I mean? So it's not that straightforward. None of this is. It's life and death. It's not supposed to be. But I suppose when you hear someone like Tina and what her dad went through and asking her to help him, it must be awful to go through that. And that's Tina and her dad. I don't like to compare loss, but imagine that was your child. I can't see anyone doing it for their child. I don't know if you'd be able to, but if it was your child asking you to help them, it's very, very difficult. This listener says, thank you, Lauren, for talking about this tough subject. I'm all for assisted suicide. My mum was diagnosed with early onset dementia a few years ago at the age of 52. Oh, that's so young. I know if she had the choice now, she'd want to end her life peacefully, surrounded by her family and in no pain. Instead, she's in a nursing home, surrounded by strangers, waiting to die. Nothing can change the outcome. She will eventually die from this disease, and it won't be until it's taken everything from her and from my family and I. I wish I could help her and didn't have to watch her slowly wither away more and more each day. She never would have wanted to suffer like this. If there's law in place when she was first diagnosed, then maybe things would be different. That must be so hard. Thank you so much for getting in touch. And this is the thing, I don't even know how that would work. Like, would you sign a form like Tina spoke about, the do not resuscitate, you know? And when it came to it, her dad said, well, give it a go once and see how you get on. I think a lot of people do that. And that's the thing, is that until you're faced with this decision yourself, your choice, your life, your death, I don't know how you would feel about it. It's very, very difficult. This listener says, for a person who is dying and has no quality of life, yes, it should be their decision. If they want to struggle on in pain or end it, they know it will get worse, with the end result being death anyway. So why the hell would anyone stand in their way to end that? Well, here's how I feel about quality of life. And I remember this was an issue when the You Before Me, what is it again? Me Before You book came out. So lots of people read that book, loved it. It was phenomenal. Jojo Moyes is a wonderful author. When it was turned into a film, it got loads of attention because that Ridley fellow was in it and your one from Game of Thrones. And it was a huge, big fuss. But what a lot of people had an issue with was that the main character in it, Will, had what a lot of people deemed to be a great quality of life. They were loaded. He got to do loads of things. He got to do lots of things that other people don't, right? And that was the issue. And so I don't know who gets to decide who has a good quality of life and who doesn't. You know, you could be in a position where you feel, I cannot go on like this. This is horrific. But then you hear stories of people who make so much of their lives despite being so debilitated, sorry, by a disease. So it's just, that's a tough call. Like that listener said, you know, who decides? Who knows what a good quality or bad quality of life is? It's a very difficult one. And if it's something that maybe you've thought about, like Tina or that other listener whose mum is in a nursing home with dementia and, as they say, waiting to die, is it something that you have given a lot of thought to? And I mentioned as well how awful it must be for people with sick children. I don't even know if that could enter your mind. But let me know what you think. Assisted suicide is the topic on the show today. Do you think we should have a law here in Ireland that would allow it? I'm on 087 711 1038. And a lot of people who have been in situations like Tina and a few of our people messaging in, talking about their own perspective and their own experiences are very much for it. But actually, the majority of messages are just raising loads of points and issues, even though they were like, yes, in theory, I do agree with it, but this would be a problem for me, that would be a problem for me. Mark says, nobody has the right to tell anyone that they must live in pain until they die of natural causes. Once an individual is of sound mind when they make the decision, even if it is years in advance of the act, their wishes should be respected. Okay, well, that's what I was wondering is, you know, can you make the decision in advance? Because you might change your mind. And if you're not of sound mind, no one will know that. And that would be awful. It's so, so difficult. Rachel says, it should be legal. My mum's uncle in his last days was in incredible amount of pain. He wanted to die. There was nothing left anyone could do. All that needed to be done was for him to die. Had he been an animal, he would have been put down. My dog has arthritis that keeps getting worse. She will need to be put to sleep in a few years once the pain is unmanageable. Why should a human be any different? In Holland, they do it. They get all the help they need first, and assisted suicide is the last resort. I'm not sure if it is the Netherlands where they do it. I know there's different laws in different countries. I mentioned earlier on hse.ie. There's a huge amount of information available there. And dyingwithdignity.org.uk, we spoke to Ellie Ball from there earlier on as well. There's lots of ins and outs to it. And I will do my best to get through all of your messages. But I did ask, and I know this is really sensitive, and I know this mightn't be easy to listen to for everyone, but I did ask, because often we hear about people who have to nurse their parents, like Tina, and as awful as that was, I was wondering what it might be like to have to see your own child dying and know that there's nothing you can do about it. Anita's been kind enough to join me on the phone. Hi, Anita.
Hi.
Thank you very much for coming on.
You're welcome. How are you?
You texted in because you unfortunately had to watch your child very, very ill.
Yeah, I had a daughter born 10 years ago. 12 years ago. She passed away 10 years ago. And I was quite young, actually, at the time. I was still living at home with my parents. And from pretty much soon after she was born, maybe 3-4 days after she was born, we were given a very, very grim prognosis of her condition, and were told that she would pass away within the next sort of week or two, and that it would be pretty much just pain relief and, you know, not really much assistance to the living, more than just maintenance of pain relief, and the condition wouldn't give her any kind of life as such. This in part was true in the end. She lived for 16 months, and while that was in itself was absolutely wonderful, it was great. She was my first child, so this was obviously a blessing, but those 16 months were absolutely horrific in another sense, that as a mother of my first child, to sit and be completely helpless when your child falls down and, you know, scrapes their knee or bangs their head or, you know, rolls off the side of the bed, the first thing you want to do is grab them and try and, you know, make them feel better. And to watch your baby literally die in front of you is one of the most heartbreaking and horrific things ever, and to be completely helpless. And that's exactly what it is. And that's the way it was. And this topic, as I was explaining to your colleague, however this debate may roll out, and Ireland, as it is, being quite behind in many many other countries, you know, move on with different discussions, Ireland is always a little bit behind, however this may play out. And if it does eventually be brought to the table, this particular part of the topic, I don't believe will ever be brought up. It's something I think people feel a lot of shame about ever thinking like this. At the time, 10 years ago, I most certainly would never have discussed it at home. It would have been really, you know, a really awful thing to say that it would have ever crossed my mind. But as I said in my text, it would have crossed my mind multiple times a week, and not for me, but for her. To watch my child literally die in front of my eyes was one of the most painful and horrific things I have ever seen in my life, and I hope to never see again.
Anita, I'm sure, and whether people want to admit it or not, I am sure you are not the only person who has felt like that. And I think you're right. It's just one of those things that you can't say that. That's your child. You would do anything to keep them alive. But I really wonder sometimes, honestly, is that the best thing? And do people, like, you see it sometimes in TV shows. I do believe, and listen, I've never been a mother, so I can't imagine what it must be like. But I do think people try their hardest to keep children alive sometimes, and it's so unfair what they're doing. And I think you're really brave for admitting that thought did go through your head, because I think a lot of people, if they're honest with themselves, do think that way sometimes.
I know that the even at that time, 12 years ago, the horror from my daughter's pediatrician for me to put, after she'd kind of gotten through the initial 6 month period, and from the horror of me putting DNR, which is, you know, the kind of equivalent, I suppose, in Ireland, to put DNR on her medical chart. And my family was absolutely torn apart. They were horrified that I was, you know, you're taking away her shot, you're taking away her chance. And I'm kind of thinking, well, no, this, you know, in one part, it's a really selfish move to not do that, to keep people with you. For you, is a very selfish thing to do, to give yourself comfort when, let's be honest, if somebody is dying, don't be under any illusion that they are in pain. Their body is dying, so they are in pain. And no amount of morphine and, you know, no amount of pain relief will take that away completely. And I know certainly for my daughter, throughout her time here, yes, of course, she was born like that, so she knew no different. But that doesn't make it okay that she was to be like that for the duration of her short time here. So, yes, it crossed my mind multiple times, but not for me, for sitting there every day watching this tiny little life just being absolutely sucked out of her, and being the person who was supposed to, you know, take care of her and you know, be the one that would make all of that go away, as moms do, and not being able to do it. And there are two sides to the argument where you say, well, you know, the easy thing to do is to, you know, make it go away by doing the euthanasia, but actually it's to relieve them of that long-term suffering, and that's an unnecessary suffering if the end result is death anyway. In my opinion.
Anita, thank you very much for coming on Spin today. I really, really appreciate it. I know it can't have been easy, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
I know it's not easy to talk about and it's not easy to listen to, but we really felt there would be strong opinions on this today, and there has been. So if you're finding it difficult, look, we are as well, but, you know, sometimes the tough conversations are the ones that need to be had. Robin has gotten in touch and joins me on the line now. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Robin, someone mentioned the Netherlands a moment ago in a message, mm-hmm. and you are doing your master's over there.
Yeah, so I'm studying, I'm home for a few days at the minute, but I'm studying criminology, forensics and law. So we kind of have a lot of connection between like medical stuff. And I was at a lecture, and I actually didn't know this until I was at the lecture, but I was at a lecture with a medical examiner, a medical investigator, and she said that she will investigate euthanasia cases, are because there's so many guidelines that have to be followed,
right,
that they have to investigate whether it was carried out correctly by the doctor. So it is something that can be done, but as far as I'm aware, with what I looked up, if you have a mental illness, or if you're suicidal, they won't do it. It's more for kind of long-term debilitating illnesses, so like a lot of the stuff that people were talking about. So it is something that they do, and it's actually one of the only countries that does it. But right. I didn't even know it until I got there. So
okay, interesting. And what are your thoughts on the idea maybe of having a law that would allow assisted suicide here in Ireland, Robin?
I think it would be, well, not a good thing, but I think it is something that should really be in place, because, I mean, it's a really difficult subject in itself, but also the illness that the people who would be making these decisions themselves are really, really awful. And not only does it affect the person, but it also affects the family and the friends. And it's almost as if, like with cases like dementia, it's really difficult because the person that you know or that you knew, they eventually, you know, they won't be there anymore. And it's tough for everybody. And I think sometimes in cases when someone's going to end up in a lot of pain for the rest of their lives, or they'll lose their memories, I think it should be something that should be looked into. Now, obviously, you know, there'd have to be specific guidelines that have to be followed, and it can't be something that's just a rash decision, which it would seem that most cases it wouldn't be. But I think it is something that should be looked into.
Okay, Robin, really interesting. And thanks for getting in touch, because as I mentioned, we got a message in referring to the Netherlands. I wasn't sure. So perfect timing that you're home for a few days and could fill us in.
I know, and I was only having a conversation about it with my housemates, because I'd only found out that euthanasia was allowed, and we were talking about it because it's one of those subjects. It's really difficult. And also, if you've never been in a situation where you've known someone who's had an illness that someone might want to get euthanasia as a result of, it's really difficult to talk about. Mm-hmm. And even if you have an opinion on it, that might change if you come into contact with someone who has an illness that is as debilitating as some of the illnesses are. So it's really difficult to talk about, but I think it's something that there definitely should be a discussion in the government about it. I think it's really important.
Robin, best of luck with your studies. Thanks a million for coming on.
Thanks, bye.
Good to have you today. There are lots of messages that have been coming through, so I'm going to do my best to get through all of them. And just a massive thank you again to those who came on and spoke about their own experiences, because that is never easy. Shane has tweeted in to say, the film Me Before You captures the terrible dilemma raised by what most people consider a moral or ethical issue. Yeah, look, I think Me Before You, as I mentioned earlier, definitely got people talking. I think we discussed it at the time on Spin Talk. It's about maybe 2 years ago now. A lot of people had issues with how Will's life was depicted on screen, though. Circa says, it depends. If it would be to allow doctors with consent to not prolong the dying process when it's already started, then okay, that sounds reasonable. But legalising assisted suicide is risky. Even if it only started off being for people who are already dying, it's likely eventually people would make the point that some people have more suffering but aren't dying, so eventually it becomes legal for them too. It makes no sense to give that as a right when those of us with long-term conditions don't yet even have a right to quality of life. Give us the right to live with dignity first. I've worked voluntarily in nursing homes in the past and other settings, and I have friends who are very, very ill long-term. And honestly, the more suffering I've seen, the more determined I am that actually a huge amount, if not most of it, could be prevented. And quality of life pretty much always has the potential to be improved. But people are denied medicinal cannabis, access to the medical care that they need. There lacks occupational therapy and freedom to try other things. And there are amazing technologies out there which you just can't get or are too expensive for some individuals. Allowing ending in those lives can make people feel like they should. And it's easy for the government to see it as the easier option, disguising it as a choice to save money instead of ever giving people proper rights to quality of life. There are perhaps a few who may be allowed, but that risks too much for the rest who could have been given hope, who could have hope if given the chance. Already I've heard of it happening to babies denied all medical care and left to die because they've been labelled incompatible with life, even though some would live longer or even long term if just given a bit of real help and lives are wasted. Circa, some great points in that. Just to reference the one you made about it getting a little out of hand. We heard from Ellie Ball a little earlier on from Dignity and Dying, and she mentioned Oregon, a state in the United States, and also a few other countries. And she said there has been no change in the laws from day one and no rise in, you know, in people demanding this. It is just some very extreme cases, and thankfully a small number of them. But some great points about quality of life and some of the medical care and what's available to us in, here in Ireland. So thank you for that. Nicole says, you have the right to refuse medical treatment for any illness that can kill you. So what's the difference with wanting to end your life? Once the person has extremely valid reasons to want to end their life, or they're coming to the end of their life, then they should be able to seek assistance without the worry the person will be convicted. Debbie says, absolutely, yes, it's your body, should be your choice when the quality of life and healthcare has become so poor that you're debilitated and in such constant pain. You wouldn't let your pet suffer this way. I'd hate to see myself or any family member suffer in the same way. So many messages on this topic today. I can't thank you enough, especially those who came on and spoke about their own experiences with parents, children. Really appreciate it. As always, we podcast, so the Spin 103.8 website or iTunes. And the conversation, as always, continues on the Spin 103.8 Facebook page. There's still lots to come in the next hour on Spin Talk.